darf vorstellen Wolfram Sann, der arbeitet bei Pingotronics, einem primär im Embedded-Umfeld aktiven Firma. Und Wolfram erzählt uns was, wie man zum Kernel beitragen kann, beziehungsweise wie man Patches upstream bekommt. Wolfram, viel Spaß.
So, am I on already? Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. This is called You Can Make the Kernel Better Part 2, because I originally wanted to talk about this topic last year. That should have been scheduled as a talk where I bring a webcam, which does not work yet with Linux. So you plug it in and you don't get the proper device, so you can't work with the webcam. And the first part of the talk, I'm a bit doing of recap right now, is how to find out how we can add Linux support to that camera without being a programmer. And that worked because webcams are often just the basic core and rebranded to different brands, and sometimes only the USB ID changes. So it can happen that inside Linux, there's already a driver for that webcam, just the USB ID is missing. And last year I showed live on stage, that was very brave, how to find out the proper USB ID of the cam, the USB ID of a similar cam, which is just rebranded, and make the driver feel responsible for that new USB ID, so we had a working camera after the talk. Linux then could support a camera. This is some kind of crowdsourcing and very useful, because developers may have a camera and may develop a driver for it, but they cannot have, of course, all the different branded versions of that camera. So it's really helpful if people try that, if they have a camera or whatever. A camera is just an example of a typical device here. Whatever device, if they could just try to get it to work. And if they do this, and this can be done without programming knowledge, feedback that to the Linux kernel, which is a very low-hanging fruit to get more support, hardware support into the Linux kernel, and this is very, very wanted. A small recap I want to add also. I mentioned last year that these websites, which collect information about, in this case, mostly IDs or USB devices, if you type LS USB at the prompt, you probably know that you get a list of what you have connected to the buses. This list is also maintained by a person and fed by crowdsourcing. So if you have a device which is not recognized by LS USB, but you know your device, of course, because you have it, then I'd really encourage you to participate in those projects. It's very easy. They have web interfaces and all that, and add an entry for these devices, because in the last year I got a couple of phones and digital cameras and whatnot, which I believed were very public, or well spread, and they still had no entry in the USB ID lists. And so, I try to add them, but I really want to encourage to participate in those projects, because it is useful information for developers. If a user just sends the printout, we want to have as much information as possible. So if you do add one entry per year, if you feel like it, then I guess we have 100 more devices supported than when I look through the room, and maybe you can convince your friends too. So that's also a good way of participating. What we came up with at the end of the last talk was we found out the driver which was driving the camera, and we knew our USB ID, and with that magical lines, the first one, I'll get my magic pen, the first one loads the driver, and the second one adds the USB ID we found out to a magic path. I explained how we got there, to a cool file called new ID. So the driver felt responsible for the camera and started supporting it, and yay, we could use the webcam. That was last year. And I had to end, because I was originally given 1 hour of talk, but was cut down. I had to end here. This is also one kind of participation you can do. that you say, okay, I found out that if I add this USB ID to that driver, then I get a working camera. I want to continue now at that point. Here you just reported to one Linux specific mailing list, and then a developer could pick up the information and create a proper patch. So we still in the end have Linux support for that camera. But the challenge is, of course, or maybe the desired path is to have your own patch in the Linux kernel. Maybe that's something to boast about, I don't know, but I think it feels good. I like to hop around projects, interesting projects, and try to do a proper patch for them. So, here we are. The first thing, if you want to create your own patch, you need the source code for the Linux kernel. In that case, I'm talking a lot about the Linux kernel, but I think a lot of basic approaches, or the approaches I mentioned, are pretty much valid for any free and open source project. So I can give you some guidelines which are especially true for the Linux kernel, but might be helpful also for other projects. The first question is, which version of the source code do we want to work on? We need a base to work on if we want to create a patch. And usually you have three choices. I guess most of you are using a Linux distribution, so you could use the source code of the kernel your distribution uses. I can use the latest tarball, which is available from kernel.org website. Or you can be top of the edge and use the latest version from the source code management tool for the kernel, that is Git. It depends a bit on how much you want to really dive into. If you just say, okay, I'll try just this one patch, and if it works out, I'm happy. Or if you just say, okay, this might be the first step to really get into kernel development. The distro version has some kind of sexiness, because usually there's also scripts for building and installing the kernel already. Which makes testing process easier. The drawback for kernel developers, is that distro kernels often have a set of additional patches applied on top of them, and which are not in the mainline kernel, and developers tend to not like that very much. That's one reason. The other reason is the kernel might be nice and stable, but quite old. So if you send a patch against the distribution kernel to the mailing list upstream, you might hear that the version is too old. The simpler the patch, of course, then you might be lucky, but I'd not really recommend the distribution version. If you're going for a simple patch, one patch, and then say, okay, I'll just try this one, then the tarball from kernel.org might be a good idea. Latest stable version would be now 3.4, just released. From my experience, one or two kernel versions behind 3.3 or 3.2 would also be acceptable. Depends a bit on the subsystem of the kernel. Or be brave, git clone, get a Linux repository and start hacking on that one. Just remember that if you start working on something, use a stable tech to work on, so not somewhere in between. Also, like a version like 3.4, or in 2 weeks it might be 3.5 RC1, you know, the release candidates or whatnot, or how they are called. So that the person who picks up your patch knows what version you were working on. If you don't know Git that well, then uh, ignore this comment for now. If you know Git, then just take the recommendation that it's nice to work on a tag which is already known. Next step is to get proper tools. This is nice. The nice thing about this is you really do have to do this once. And then you can work on different projects in the free and open source world. If you have the tools ready, it will ease the workflow a lot. You could use plain diff and compare the old version of a file against the new one, and send this by hand to a mailing list. But believe me, from some years of experience, this is very error prone and creates a lot of work for both the maintainer and the one sending the patch. There are tools which ease the workflow. If you like it simple and don't need fancy features, there's something like Quilt? I never know. Does somebody know how it's pronounced? Native speakers, anyone? No. Which does some basic management for you, so it helps you to not overwrite files or lose your changes. If you want to dive in more, the tool to use for the kernel is Git. I don't want to give an introduction to those programs. There are good tutorials around how to get into. I'd like to recommend just reading a few how-tos, how to get into it, and spend a few time on really configuring them correctly so you know what you're doing and not just try and error. Just spend a bit of time at the beginning on understanding the tools, and that will save you a lot of time in the end. Regarding the kernel, we have lots of documentation there. If you extract the kernel source code, there's a whole subdirectory called documentation. There is very useful information there. There's a lot of outdated information there, so use it with care. The first one I wrote, documentation development process, is a set of files which is really worth reading. It's up to date and describes how the Linux development process in general works, so you get an idea. The other two I wrote down about the coding style and submitting patches. For starters, I would think this is more like a reference material. So I mentioned them here. You don't have to read them. A good way to start might looking at patches other people send to the mailing lists or other patches which have been applied to the Linux kernel. And if you see something there which makes you curious, those two files here are good for getting some in-depth explanation about what's happening. I assume every bigger project will have some such a file explaining how to get in or how the workflows are. To save you some precious time, potential time, is check if the change you want to do has already been made. I saw it a lot of times. I'm maintaining the I2C subsystem in the Linux kernel, and I do get patches doing the same multiple times because, it can bring you on fire if you see, oh, there's a problem and I'm going to fix it, and you start hacking right away. And then you get three solutions to the same problem in a very short time frame. There is a version, a Git tree called Linux Next, where everything which is going to be included in the Linux kernel will be gathered for testing. I'd like to show you, but I managed to break my network here, so I can't show it online. There is a web interface, a Git web interface for that, so you can browse through the tree, directory trees in the same way as you do on your hard disk. And per file, there's a history. So if you check the history of that file, you can easily check if the change you're intending to do has already been made. And also do web searches again. Now that you understood the problem and think you are able to fix it right now, you have more in-depth knowledge, so you can do a more precise search and find mails or threads which you have missed before, and then you find out, oh, there's somebody else working on the problem. This can happen too. So I'd suggest to, before you start hacking, do another search, a second time, a search for the solution which you're trying to fix. Then, so you don't do it twice. So in our case, nobody added support for that camera. It was still unsupported after the Linux tag. And we could send a patch to add the support. So Linux kernel has 15 million lines of source codes. We need to change one. How do we find it? It's no magic. The first thing which is written on that slide is what I use mostly, find and grep. I might simply show that to you. Can you read that in the back? Is it readable? Good. The first, if we look at the root directory, I hope it shows. No, that's not nicely readable. But if you do it with a smaller font, you will easily see that you probably go to the drivers directory of the Linux kernel. If you try to dig in further, you see that there's a lot of subdirectories, and you don't want to browse them by hand. And if I just type find from here, and then that's the driver name we already found out in the first part of the talk. That's a driver we know we need to modify. Then you immediately get the C file which we need to touch. Here it's another one. LKDDB is a Linux kernel drivers database, which does basically the same, just on the web. So if you type the driver name and this LKDDB into the Google, whatever search engine line, you will get the same results. It will immediately tell you which file you need to modify. So, and in that file, we just need to check where is the old USB ID, which makes the driver feel responsible for the camera, for the similar camera, and then we add the new ID, which is a new camera we want to support. Oh, that's not readable. Still readable? Okay, somewhere. And then let's search for 0AC8. That's a comment. That's a comment. That's a comment. Ah. These are lines which tell the driver for which USB IDs it feels responsible. There's no magic. You don't need to be a programmer to understand how to add a line or how to remove it. It's just a string and the USB ID device. I think everyone can do that. You see that it's sorted, so it would be nice to keep that sorting. I go to the beginning of the table, or onto the correct place. Okay, I found out I already did. And here in that line, at the very above, this is the line I inserted for the new camera. That's all. That is all that is needed to add support for the camera in the source code. You don't know anything about, you have to know anything about USB or whatnot. Here's my slide. course, it's good behavior to test your patches before you send them in. It depends a bit on the complexity of the patch, because very complex patches need lots of testing. If you now think very simple patches need less of testing, then I won't officially say yes, but yes. such a simple, you would not need to test such a patch on, for example, different architectures, PowerPC or ARM. So if you can do a build test for that kind of change, that would be nice. Very, very unofficially, I also say, you can't, it's pretty hard to break the build with such a single liner. So if you do not feel comfortable with building the kernel and testing on your machine or reinstalling, then I personally, as a maintainer, would accept the patch and test it on my own. I regularly do lots of build tests, so that won't cause much pain for me. If you do a bit of code changes, please also note that in the kernel, warnings are usually considered errors, so don't introduce new warnings. But in our case, this is too simple to create any warning. Doing the patch is very easy if you got your tools right, what I said at the beginning. If you use Kilt, you have the patch immediately. If you have Git, it's just a matter of showing with Git one line if it's okay, if I'm still satisfied, and then I commit it to my repository, and it will help me to send a patch and even write the email in one go. A lot of people try, that's all too complicated, I'll do that step by step on my own and copy paste the patch into Thunderbird and whatnot. This is causing lots of extra work. So I suggest to use the tools. It's for Kilt, it's a matter of saying Kilt header, to add a proper header. Git will automatically ask you for a proper patch description. I am showing you now the patch which I sent to the... just a second. I made a mistake, sorry. Inverting this patch. That's the patch I created for such a simple patch. The description, it's enough to be, I add support for that kind of camera. If you do a bit more, please remember that the patch description should describe why you want that change into the Linux kernel and not what you're doing. The why is more important than the what. The patch should be self-descriptive about the what. So I said it. Just say why the change is needed. What is the gain of sending the patch into the main repository? I'm sorry, I lost a bit confused right now. I wanted to show something else. Bear with me. Bear with me. I'm sorry, I'll go on. I hope I'll remember it later. There's a special tool in the kernel development process called CheckPatch, which helps you to avoid the most easy mistakes, or the most often done mistakes. That's what I wanted to show you. So the first thing I wanted to show you is that it's just one line, this one, to create a patch which is already suitable to send mainline. It will not have line breaks at the wrong places. It will have the proper context, and it will be immediately applicable for every maintainer into his repository. If we look at it, and since it makes work so much easier, I recommend to use such tools like Kilt as well. No, that's not okay. There's no highlighting, so. Well, we'll skip that too. I wanted to show checkpatch.pl, and you can apply it to the patch we just created, and it says that our patch was good enough. It had checked the most made faults, and we didn't make one, so our patch is ready for submission. It does not necessarily mean that the patch will automatically be applied. It's just now you can dare to send it. Be aware that this is just an aid for you. It's a tool. So sometimes there's a warning, and people try to fix all the warnings and make the code, make something less readable. It's just a tool. Please, the ultimate solution is common sense. So if you think that tool is terribly wrong, you can complain about it, and that might be discussed. But for starters, this is a good thing to see if you can get rid of your patch. If you do that and your patch is fine, then the next step is to find out whom to send it to. And there's also another tool, which is called Get Maintainers, which will automatically tell you who's responsible for the patch you just created. I'll just run it on the file as well. Oh, I should have some more highlighting. And yeah, that's the people responsible for the patch, adding this support for the camera. This saves you a lot of work digging mailing lists, finding out on your own. It might be a very talkative tool, but the rule of thumb here is that you rather have too many people added to the list of whom you are sending the patch to than too few. It doesn't matter. Kernel developers are used to getting lots of emails, so I usually have to scan, I think, 1,500 emails a day, so a few more don't really hurt. But it will ensure that the proper people get your patch and have a look at it and apply it, or say what you need to fix in order to get it applied. Yeah, as I said, use Kilt and Git, for example, have these commands, mail and send email, which will also ensure that you send a proper email with all the proper tags, and so that it can easily be applied. They are especially made for this. Programs like Thunderbird are especially made to send emails to living persons, and that's a totally different aim for a program. So the feature set is totally different, and sending a patch tools which are meant for personal communication is really challenging. There are ways, there are descriptions how to do it, but I really don't recommend it. One final thing, now the patch is out, and you're very happy and eager to get a response. People are coming in and saying, yeah, that's a patch we wanted for a long time, and hooray. The truth is likely that for the first time nothing will happen. Please don't take that personal. There are so many patches around, and the kernel development has a nice amount of people, but it's still too few. So things will probably take time, and don't get frustrated by that. Just keep at it. And send pings, if you're used to kernel development, you really just see mails saying, ping, what about this patch? And the reason, as I said, is usually the maintainers are too busy, forgot it, it dropped off their mailings. It's nothing, almost never anything personal. The usual workflow is that a maintainer says, okay, applied your patch, thank you very much. Or he says, that still does not fit. Please do this and that change. But then you're already in contact. And the second time, the maintainer is more responsive to the new version. And then it will go in pretty fast. Some maintainers don't do that. Mails writing, okay, I applied it. That's something we have to live in. The subsystem and subsystems in the Linux kernel are very, very different. They really get a personal touch from their maintainer. So what I say here are rules of thumb. It pays off to check the mailing list for a subsystem to get a feeling how the development process in that area might differ a little bit. A general way to check if your patch was applied was Linux Next. I already said that all new changes are gathered there, and if you find your patch already being in Linux Next, then you have won, because then it will definitely go into the next version of Linux. From my experience, both as a patch sender and a patch receiver, I think if you ask after 2 to 4 weeks, so hey, what about this version of the patch? That's a good time frame. If people ask every day, oh, well, what happened to my patch? Do you like it? Do you have time to review it? And I spend more time saying, no, I didn't have time to review it than looking at the patch, which is which just increases the workload of a maintainer. Yeah, and if you manage to get your patch into the Linux kernel, then be happy about it, celebrate, and start hacking on the next one. if you liked it, or some other free and open source project. I think it's rewarding, and as you can easily imagine, the more you get, the more you do it, the easier it gets. That's one part, because you develop your workflow. The other part is that you develop trust with the people you're sending patches to. So they know you, and they will entrust you, which is a good feeling. And you really slide into the development. And sooner than you know, you can call yourself a kernel developer if you want, which is pretty wanted term these days. I know a few people wanting to hire kernel developers if you need that kind of motivation. But for me, it's really taking part in the community process. I really like that community thing. Yeah, thank you very much for your attention. I'm very sorry for my confusion in the middle of the talk. It's a bit due to the merge window is open, just opened recently. So this is a very, very special time for Linux maintainers, causing sleepless nights to get everything done so the new Linux kernel won't crash, so, but will be a nice version everyone wants to have. So that's why I'm a bit sleepy right now, sorry. I hope you could get something out of it. If not, I'm here right now. I'll be here tomorrow at the conference. You can ask me anytime. You can write me an email. It's really important. I want to get people into development, free software development, and especially kernel development, because we need community around that, and not only companies working on that. That's what I think makes Linux a lot more powerful than other operating systems. Yeah, thank you very much, and I'm open for questions.
Are there any questions? No questions, really?
Talk to you to death.
Yeah. Yep. A little bit of sports.
Hello. I have a very crappy, cheap laptop with a camera, and there was a patch to reverse the camera picture, because in Asia some of the cameras are simply built-in reverted, and I found an old version. There was a kernel patch. I think I could change a flag, and then it worked. But it somehow disappeared, and there is a very crappy solution using the LD library path, adding another library just to invert the camera picture. How is this handled? Who is discussing it, or what does go into the kernel space? What does what is considered as a user space problem? Because it was because the whole device was so cheap, I didn't want to invest too much time or money fixing this. And even I was a little bit annoyed because this problem seemed to be fixed in the past, but the patch disappeared somehow from the kernel.
So the question was, where is decided if a solution takes place in kernel and user space? Did I get this right? That's one aspect. And the other thing is the patch disappeared from the kernel, you said? A feature. So it was already in the kernel. In the mainline kernel.
Somehow someone fixed it in, I think, an old Ubuntu version, and then the fix disappeared somehow. And therefore I thought it could be solved, but then I found another patch using a library doing the same job, simply catching an LD a library call and reverting it using LD library path and something like that. And this was a little bit distracting, and it looked like it looked a little bit confusing to me.
Yeah, things like removing features, breaking user space is one of the things we kernel developers really, really want to avoid. So I don't know that special case. The decision where a fix takes place in kernel or user space happens on the appropriate mailing lists so for that subsystem in the Linux kernel. Usually, if something is moved around, there will be a legacy interface to support the old version, which then gets deprecated for usually a long time, a few years. Then sometimes you get a warning that this is deprecated, you have to switch to the new version. So what I think I could have happened here, without knowing the details, is that the fix caused some other issues for maybe other, still the driver, but for other cameras or whatnot. So the fix had to be fixed, and while fixing the fix, we fixed it wrong in the wrong way, so the original fix was going away. It's pretty hard to change drivers in a way that you don't regress, because nobody has all the types of hardware on his desk. it can't really be avoided all the time. I think that's what happened here. We have strategies. We know the people who have the hardware and ask them, hey, I have this change. I know you have the hardware. Can you check? But in that case, it might just have been missed. That's all I can say without digging into the details. That helps you somehow.
Any more questions? We are a bit behind time already, but I think there's time for one more question.
Yeah. I think I'll send them to Linux Talk, and I don't know. I assume they put them on their website. Maybe I'll put the slides from last year in front of that. That gives a bit more context, even. Oh.
Okay, many thanks for your talk.